Welcome to Historically St. Pete, a weekly conversation where we explore the truths and possibly the myths of the people and events that created the Sunshine City. My name is Rui Frias, and I have the coolest job in town. I'm the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History. Located on the St. Pete Pier, the Museum of History has been sharing the stories of the Sunshine City for 102 years, and we're happy to share those stories with you here on Radio St. Pete. So St. Petersburg is blessed with a number of unique neighborhoods, some over 100 years old, some fairly new as far as history goes, but definitely none as unique as Roser Park. This historic gem is tucked away just outside the downtown corridor and unknown, actually, to a lot of St. Pete residents. I mean, I grew up on the edge of Roser Park. I love guiding our trolley tours through Roser Park, if just to see the reaction of amazement on some of the faces as we go through the neighborhood. So our guest today is Dom Pontoriero. I hope I said that right with my Portuguese accent. I'm sorry if I messed it up. Dom is the president of the Roser Park Neighborhood Association. So welcome, Dom. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This is great.
Absolutely. So, all right. So before we discuss the neighborhood, and we've got a lot to discuss about the neighborhood, let's talk about Charles M. Roser. This is a city that it appears that has been built on myths, right? So he fits in perfectly when it comes to this. A young man in the late 1800s, he entices his family to invest in a confectionery factory in Ohio. And we're fast-forwarding through the history here. But in 1910, he sells the factory, including everything it makes. And this is where history gets reshaped, kind of like the neighborhood. So as the story goes, you know, the records are kind of blurry, but Roser sells his company to a different company, which is then purchased or taken over, let's say, by the National Biscuit Company, which we now know as Nabisco. So no matter how it happened, Roser ends up with about $1 million in his pocket for his factory in the process of making America's greatest cookie. The Fig Newton, right? So it wasn't
a hot take.
Yeah, I know. So, but he didn't call it the Fig Newton. That was a Nabisco thing. He produced fig cakes, and Nabisco, you know, created the whole Fig Newton image. How many versions of this story have you heard?
Oh, I've heard so many different versions, and we've had debates, you know, in the neighborhood as to how much we want to lean into this Fig Newton inventor sort of story. Because there are some, you know, there are some nebulous facts, right, surrounding this. And some people are like, oh, this man invented the Fig Newton, this man did this man did that. Regardless of what is real, what the true story is.
Hey, sometimes the truth isn't as good as the myth, right?
We do have Fig Newtons at some of our events.
There you go.
We do talk about the Fig Newton. So it is a nice story.
It is a great story. And you know, so my archivist and one of our, you know, crack volunteers, you know, went through lots of rabbit holes. I mean, she pulled up, you know, Charles Roser, all kind of, you know, information from his entire life and documents, and came into my office and said, I'm going to bust your bubble here. I'm like, get out. I'm like, I don't want to hear it. We know somehow, right, that the whole thing comes down to fig cakes, right?
Yeah,
and that's what it comes down to.
He was responsible for pioneering some type of technology.
That's exactly
that,
right.
And, you know, really, in my opinion, when it comes to invention, this is a very capitalist idea, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, can any one person really invent one thing, right?
Exactly,
so, you
exactly.
know, he had some hand in the production of the Fig Newton.
Okay, so going forward, we're just going to say he invented the Fig Newton, and we're good.
Yes.
All right, good. That works for me.
Keeps
all
it
right.
simple.
So he, you know, when he sells his company, he gets his money. And in 1910, $1 million is a tremendous amount of money, right?
I mean, hey, it's a lot of money now. So
yeah,
back
true,
then.
True. Sure. So, you know, he does some traveling around the world, and he ends up coming to St. Pete, and not because he's a sick man. And that was the main reason why people were heading here during that time period, because they were usually suffering from some sort of respiratory disease living up north, all winter long, breathing in that wonderful air in their house that was heated by coal-burning furnaces. So, you know, their doctors prescribed them warmth in Florida, basically, right? And ended up here. But he came down here as a businessman. I mean, some of the stuff that he bought and sold, like the Poinsettia Hotel, the 500 block of Central Avenue, the Royal Palm Hotel. But he doesn't really become a permanent fixture, right, in our history until he purchases those 12 acres of mostly orange groves on the outskirts of what is the city limits at that time for $12,000, which was an unheard of sum of money. No one ever paid $1,000 an acre for land in St. Pete back then. with the distinct plans on building what he wanted to create was America's like most beautiful neighborhood. Did he succeed?
I think so. I mean, I'm one of those people that lived in St. Pete for a while before discovering Roser Park, and the day that I accidentally went through the neighborhood, I felt like I was transported to just like a mythical land. Mm-hmm. It's got these cliffs and hills, and it's got a creek running through it. It really is quite scenic, more scenic than I say than any other neighborhood that we have here in the area.
Well, I know, like, I'm pretty sure the date was 1917 that Home and Garden magazine actually came here and did a story on St. Petersburg, but primarily Roser Park, and did proclaim that it was one of the most unique, beautiful neighborhoods in the country. So it definitely is. And there's so many things about that neighborhood that makes it unique. So tell us about some of them.
About the neighborhood. So things that I like about Roser Park, it has the iconic hex block sidewalks. I don't know exactly when those were installed. You probably know. It has these 100-year-old brick streets that Charles Roser insisted that they were installed. Back then, it was a huge undertaking to do brick streets, right?
Right.
So it has that throughout the neighborhood. It has Booker Creek, which is, I think, the longest creek in St. Pete, going right through it. We're home to two parks, two little parks, Roser Park and then Woodbrook Park. And then we have MLK to our west and Fort Street to our east. It's really nicely situated just south of downtown. I walk downtown to get there. You know, it's a nice little walk, especially when it's cooler out. And then we also have this beautiful, iconic oak tree that bends over the creek, and we all know him as Charles the Tree, or I call him Charlie the Tree.
Of course.
So it's got a lot of beautiful and a lot of it's very lush. You know, you walk in there and it feels like you're going through like almost like a botanical garden, which is something that I don't experience a lot in other neighborhoods.
And the homes. So, I mean, especially the homes that line the creek are just magnificent. I mean, these homes were you know, he wasn't building 2-bedroom, 1-bath homes with carports, right?
So right.
These were fantastic.
Yeah, he specifically wanted to build iconic homes with different architectural styles to really draw people into the neighborhood. And so when you walk down or drive down Roser Park Drive, you'll see there's like several different historic architectural styles, and they're beautiful homes. Yeah.
So the park. So I got to tell you the story. I tell the people on the trolley tour this, and they look at me like I'm crazy. So you know who Evel Knievel is, right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah.
So when I was a kid, you know, Evel Knievel was on Wide World of Sports every Saturday morning, jumping over things. So again, growing up on the edge of Roser Park, my buddies and I decided, listen, if Evel Knievel can jump Snake River Canyon, we're going to jump Booker Creek.
Oh, jeez.
So having no concept of physics or anything, we built a ramp and put it on the edge of the seawall and rode our bikes down the park hill and hit that ramp. So
did you make it across?
No, none of us made it across. We all ended up in the creek. It was, you know. But it was such, even back then, when a lot of people were escaping from, you know, the downtown area and moving to West St. Pete or places like Seminole and things like that, right? Even then, that neighborhood still kept that magical, just unreal. I mean, you don't go through any, you know, there's maybe two other neighborhoods that can match that in St. Petersburg, where you drive through, and like you said, it was almost like you were transported to some Wonderland place, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
a little bit more about Charles Roser. So he had to be one of the city's, you know, favorite developers, and not just because of what he built, but what he gave back. He donated the park, right, back to the city. Mm-hmm. He donated the land to build Roser Park Elementary, where I went to elementary school, so I remember that building. He built a dorm for nurses next to Mound Park Hospital, right? And then, of course, he moved the original hospital to 22nd Street, which became part of the whole Mercy Hospital situation. For the African-American neighborhood when our city was incredibly segregated back then. So how much does this history – I mean, this guy did a lot for St. Pete, right? He didn't just come here, build stuff, and, you know, head back to New York or Miami or, you know, wherever you're from, L.A. So how much does this history mean to the neighborhood?
So I bring this up a lot because, you know, developers today don't do things like – know, don't typically do things like donate part of the land that they purchase for investment to the city. You know, that's not something we hear about a lot. And so the fact that he contributed so much to the city, you know, seemingly selflessly, mm-hmm. it does mean a lot, and it really has shaped that part of St. Pete. We have the hospital facilities that are just north of Roser Park. You know, that was really started by him. The foresight and compassion that he saw in building the hospital, building the dorms, building the hospital for the African American community. I mean, back then, that's something that a lot of people weren't doing, and I think that legacy has sort of stuck with us, and we're very proud of that history, and that's important for me anyway. And a lot of people in the neighborhood, really, if you move to a historic neighborhood, it's because you love history, and so the fact that we can sort of reflect on these really positive contributions, I think, means a lot to the residents.
Excellent. And it should. I mean, that is, like I said, it's in such an incredible neighborhood to live in and to be proud of. So talking about, you know, his history, I've literally have like folders and boxes full of notes of St. Pete history in my house and my office.
I'm
and
sure
stuff,
you
right?
do.
So, I mean, one of the things that I came across was that a lot of Charles Roser's history almost disappeared. There was a resident at Park Lane Condominiums on 4th Street, 4th Street North, that was, you know, throwing away a bunch of stuff of an empty condo. Someone, you know, was doing some dumpster diving, I guess, back then, and they picked up some boxes that had, you know, documents in it and newspaper clippings and a lot of old photographs of St. Petersburg. So what it was actually were... It all belonged to Charles Roser. It was his photographs. It was telegrams. There were letters that, you know, here's the guy who was the creator of this, you know, the subdivision and numerous other developments throughout the city, who gave so much back to the city that, I mean, it turns out from what I read that Eleanor, his daughter, lived in that building. And apparently, I guess when she passed away, they just tossed everything out. So... You think back, like, oh my,
crazy.
I know, like, oh my gosh. I mean, that's just amazing. That I'm so thankful that actually someone found it and had the foresight to actually bring it to us and to, you know, to save it. So, you know, everybody, you know, Charles Roser, you know, the whole Fig Newton story, Roser Park, of course. But what a lot of people don't know about him, and he wasn't restricted to developing in St. Petersburg. When he got here, he was told about this magical place a little south of St. Petersburg, took a boat ride down in 1911 to a barren key named Anna Maria Island. And when he got there, he just fell in love with it. So his development reached as far south as Anna Maria. He partnered in a company called the Anna Maria Beach Company to develop the island. He built a pier so boats could go there. And, you know, I think, and of course, you know, we can't prove this obviously because we can't have a talk with him, but it looked like from what I discovered that the plan was to create this thing where people could go travel back and forth from St. Petersburg to Anna Maria by boat. He had a real estate office there, and in 1913, in true Charles Roser fashion, he built the Roser Memorial Community Church, the first church in Anna Maria, which still stands today.
Wow, this is all
so
news to me.
That goes back to like he didn't just come here to make money, and he did. I mean, he was buying and selling property at a pretty quick clip and making profits doing it. But he gave so much back to the city. When we look at these neighborhoods and you hear some of these stories of these guys like Charles Roser, it's just. There's so much history. There's so much history tied into it. How many? Oh, I have to ask you this question. The bridge.
Which bridge?
This has taken longer to build than the Howard Franklin.
Oh, the MLK bridge.
Yeah.
Yes, it has. It's been 4.5 years. I think going on 5 years. So the question is, when is it going to be done?
Yes.
So there were some issues with the bridge. The contractors that were hired to construct the bridge ran into some financial troubles, bankruptcy.
Oh.
I mean, I don't know exactly. I'm not their accountant, but apparently they were having some problems. And but FDOT, who's managing the project, has been working with I think their insurance, and the plan is to get the bridge done by the end of this summer. But it does feel like it is moving at a snail's pace. But there is a little bit of progress every few weeks, I've noticed. And the guy from FDOT has been nice enough to keep me updated. So the promise is that by the end of the summer, it will be open. It will be done completely.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And what's really nice about this bridge is when they designed it in a way that there is the potential to create a bike trail underneath the bridge.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So that we could have a bike trail going all the way down Rosa Park Drive and into Campbell Park, which would really connect us to other neighborhoods in downtown.
That's
and the new the Ray's Heinz development.
Right, right. So that would bring people to the neighborhood, which obviously I know that you guys as neighborhood associations, we participate in some of these. You have created your own events there, right?
Yeah.
Let's hear about that.
I try to wear a festive Rosa Park shirt from a little music festival we organized. But yeah, we really love bringing people together and having people enjoy our neighborhood and the park. We have a big Halloween event. Last year, you came and helped give ghost tours of the neighborhood during that event. We're going to have it again this year on October 19th.
Nice.
It's going to have a market, free movies in the park. We're going to have some performances. We're going to have ghost tours. It's going to be a lot of fun. And we're also working on a music event in March of 2025. I don't want to give too many details because we're still in the early planning stages, and I don't want anybody to steal our ideas. So
until we
finalized everything,
right.
Just know that end of March, March 29th, we are planning on having a music event. But
perfect.
But October 19th, come to Rosa Park. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah,
we'll be at both of them.
Good.
So that's.
Good. I was going to ask you.
Oh, gosh.
I was going to demand that you come. So I'm glad that you already volunteered.
Because we didn't even touch on this. It is the city's first designated historic neighborhood, right?
It is. Yeah. We won that title by a small margin because apparently the old Northeast neighborhood had also applied for that designation. But there was some, some quarreling amongst the residents of the old Northeast about it, and so theirs got delayed, and we made it as the first official historic neighborhood in St. Pete. Yes.
Well, congrats. That's it. It's an amazing feature to have there.
It is,
so,
yeah.
All right, so I've got to ask you this. Other than your own, which is your favorite house in Rosa Park?
Oh, that's a good question. That's a really hard question. So we have a few really awesome houses. So there is the Bradshaw Mansion, which I really like. That is a house that was constructed by one of the early mayors of St. Pete, and it really stands out. It kind of looks like the mansion from the haunted that Disney film, The Haunted Mansion. I think it's called.
It does actually. Yeah.
It was built in 1916, so it's over 100 years old. That is a beautiful house. I also like, there's a house that has, some of the houses have names. One house is named House Beautiful. It's right on Rosa Park Drive. It's actually for sale right now.
Really?
It is, yeah. That house is beautiful. I wish I could afford it. That I really like. And then the house right next to it has an interesting sort of Mediterranean stucco exterior that I really like. It's really hard to choose. But I would say, if I had to choose one, I would say House Beautiful is my favorite.
So legend goes that Rose Ernest Travels fell in love with the Swiss Alps, and that's kind of what attracted him to Rosa Park.
Oh, interesting. So that explains the Swiss chalet.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, but he, you know, and I guess I'm from what I understand, he wanted to replicate the Swiss Alps, but with a tropical feel.
That's an interesting concept, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So instead of snow, we have beautiful plants and flowers and trees and stuff year-round. But that takes us to the Swiss Chalet, because there is a Swiss Chalet there right on the creek.
Everybody knows it as a Swiss Chalet. It's beautiful views of the creek, too. I mean, that would be a wonderful house to live in.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, so don't forget, folks. So October 19th.
October 19th.
March 29th.
Rosa Park Halloween Block Party and Ghost Tours. And then March 29th, we will also be having a music festival.
That we won't disclose yet, but it's definitely going to happen.
Mark your calendars and look out for it. Yeah, you'll hear about it soon.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Dom, thank you so much for joining us on Historically St. Pete. We're so happy to have you guys here to talk about Rosa Park. So stop by the St. Pete Museum of History on your next visit to the pier and explore the rich and unique history of the Sunshine City. We're located right at the entrance of the St. Pete Pier. We're open 7 days a week. You can visit historystpete.org for more details about the museum or look at some of our trolley and boat tours that we do. Thank you again for listening, and join us next week on Historically St. Pete.